ज्ञानतिमिरान्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। हरे कृष्ण। सो ऐम वेरी हैप्पी टू बी बैक हियर इन राधा गोपीनाथ मंदिर एज अ रन अप टू द जन्माष्टमी फेस्टिवल दैट इज जस्ट अराउंड द कॉर्नर। We are having a series of lectures on various connected topics, and today the topic is removing misconceptions about Lord Sri Krishna's Rasa Leela. And as we are all aware, there are indeed many, many misconceptions. In fact, when you're discussing with someone, and I just had experience just a week ago, and somebody was asking so many questions, and when he had no other reply to give, then he threw his Brahmastra. Then why did Krishna dance with the gopis? Because there is nothing else. Now this is the ultimate weapon of those who have some doubts, because it seems to be the easiest point on which we can attack Krishna or criticize Sanatana Dharma or Bhagavat Dharma. So it is actually, yes, very, very misleading unless one has understood it properly in the disciplic succession. Because we tend to see things from the point of view of our experience within this world. Based on our experience, we develop certain conceptions of life. And we try to superimpose these conceptions of so-called morality or good behavior upon everyone except ourselves, including God. So we want that God should be subjected to these things, but we forget that actually these conceptions need to be refined in the light of spiritual knowledge. The Rasa Leela is not an excuse for us to try to imitate, but there is a very, very deep theology or a philosophy behind this. And the highest pastime actually of Lord Krishna, that is, the Rasa Leela, is the most misunderstood. And therefore, it is very, very important to clarify misconceptions about this. It is very hard to understand. And even recently, there was a big controversy. It went right up to the Supreme Court, and that's when some comment made in the Supreme Court of India made headlines and many sound bites on television. And the confusion was compounded when various Hindu leaders and others were also asked about it, and they gave their own opinions. It just added to the whole confusion. This is one area on which many people who vouch for Sanatana Dharma actually are put on the defensive. But it doesn't have to be like that. Once we understand what the truth is, then there is no need to be on the defensive. It's just a matter of clarifying spiritual conceptions. In the Srimad Bhagavatam, the well-known Rasa Leela dance of Lord Krishna is described in the 10th canto. The 10th canto in particular is devoted to the pastimes of Swayam Bhagavan Sri Krishna, beginning with Krishna's divine appearance in this world, his childhood pastimes, his boyhood pastimes, his youthful pastimes, and then going on to Mathura, Dwarka, and so on. Srila Prabhupada, many times in his books and his lectures, has cautioned us that we should not directly jump to the 10th canto, and particularly to the Rasa Leela pastimes of the Lord. he mentions that there are many professional reciters of the Srimad Bhagavatam and also others who, in an effort to entertain an innocent but ignorant audience, go straight to the Rasalila. And they describe in ways that are not proper. There are also many others in Vrindavan and in other places who try to focus only on this and imitate the ways of Lord Krishna. They are called Prakrita Sahajiyas because they take the process of Krishna consciousness or bhakti very cheaply. So Srila Prabhupada says that it is very important that we first study the 9 cantos, the first 9 cantos of the Srimad Bhagavatam, and then we will be in a position to understand the 10th canto, especially the Rasalila. Without understanding at least the basic principles of the first 9 cantos, it will be hard for us to really figure out what this Rasalila actually is. There are 5 chapters in the Srimad Bhagavatam, chapters 29 to 33, which actually talk about the Rasalila. And Shukadev Goswami has described in detail, in vivid detail, the pastimes leading up to the Rasalila and then the Rasalila itself. At the end of the 5th chapter, which is called the Rasa Panchadhyaya, the 5 chapters relating to the Rasalila, at the very end of this description, Parikshit Maharaj raises a very pertinent question. He sees that there are many sages assembled there where Shukadev Goswami has been narrating the Srimad Bhagavatam to him, who are not exactly devotees. When King Parikshit renounced the world, having been cursed to die in 7 days, he came to the bank of the Ganga, and many, many sages from all over, not just the earth planet, but even other parts of the universe, quickly came there, because he knew this was going to be a historic occasion. Not all of them were devotees. Parikshit Maharaj was an exalted devotee of Krishna. So he relished the discussion of the Srimad Bhagavatam, Krishna's pastimes, and even the Rasalila. But he was concerned about the other sages who were present in that assembly. And he was also concerned about future generations of people in this world who would misunderstand. And he asked Shukadev Goswami, "My dear Brahman, we see that the Lord has declared in the scriptures that he advents in this material world to establish the principles of religion. Dharma sansthapanarthaya sambhavami yuge yuge. He comes here to establish the principles of religion and to personally exhibit ideal conduct, proper behavior. And he also comes to destroy the principles of irreligion. So why is it that the Supreme Lord Shri Krishna did something like dancing with the wives of other people, and that also in the middle of the night in a solitary place? This is confusing me. It is bewildering me. So kindly explain." Actually, Parikshit Maharaj was not bewildered, but he was asking on our behalf to clear our bewilderment. Shukadev Goswami was anticipating this question. Of course, there is much that is there about this topic. It is not going to be possible for us in just one lecture to really elaborate on all the different aspects of the Rasalila, to conclude why it is such a bona fide thing and to present it in the right way. So we'll try just to speak a few essential points relating to this very, very famous and celebrated Leela. So Shukadev Goswami then spoke one verse, which is up here on the board. It's a well-known verse. Shukadev Goswami first went on to say that actually powerful controllers in this universe, like Brahma, Shiva, Indra, we should not question their transgression of morality. Because they are very powerful controllers, they are not affected much by such transgressions. Just as when fire receives within itself many, many polluted things, it burns up the polluted things. But the fire itself remains unpolluted. It remains pure. Srila Prabhupada elsewhere also explains a similar thing about the sun. He said the sunshine is so powerful, the sun is so powerful that merely its sunshine extending over millions of miles is able to purify a dirty place and to make it clean. But the sun remains pure. It is never affected by anything impure that comes in its path. So great controllers, Srila Sridhar Swami has also explained, quoting the example of Brahma, and there are descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam about where Brahma also may have apparently violated the laws of morality, but because they are such powerful controllers, directly empowered by the Lord, they are protected. And such transgressions of morality from our point of view don't really affect them so much. So we should not criticize them for it. And least of all, we should not try to imitate them. So here Shukadev Goswami goes on to say, what will happen if we try to imitate the great controllers? Now Brahma, Indra, Shiva are representatives of Lord Krishna. They are empowered by Lord Krishna. They are not directly the Supreme Lord. So if even for these empowered representatives of the Lord, transgressions of morality as we understand it are not issues and they remain unaffected and they cannot be imitated, what then to speak of Lord Sri Krishna, who is the all-powerful, all-knowing, Supreme Personality of Godhead, who is unaffected by anything of this material world. So therefore Shukadev Goswami, in the very next verse, he cautions us that we should not imitate. And he also cautions us, because this is a great offense, he also cautions us that we should switch off our mobile phones during the lectures in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he says that when it's in front of the Lord and the katha is going on, it is a disturbance. We should be hearing only the transcendental sound vibration. That is also spoken by Shukadev Goswami, who anticipated that mobile phones will come in Kali Yuga. So in this verse, he is giving us his very, very important word of caution. So let us chant this verse. It is verse number 30. Verse number 30 in the 33rd chapter.
Naitat samachare jatu. Manasapi Hyanishvaraha Vinashatyacharan Maudhyat Yatha Rudrobhijam Visham.
Translation: one who is not a great controller should never imitate the behavior of ruling personalities, even mentally. If out of foolishness an ordinary person does imitate such behavior, he will simply destroy himself, just as a person who is not Rudra would destroy himself if he tried to drink an ocean of poison. Na etat samachare jatu. Never at any time should someone perform manasa api, even in his mind. He anishvaraha. If he is not a great controller of the universe, he is not Ishvara, he is anishvaraha. He should not even in his mind try to imitate the activities of great ruling personalities of the universe. What is the result if he does? Vinashyati acharan maudhyad. We are all familiar with the word mudha from the Bhagavad Gita. Foolishness, the maudhyad. Out of foolishness, acharan, if somebody behaves like this in imitation, vinashyati, he becomes destroyed. Yatha arudraha abhijam visham. Just as a person who is arudraha, who is not Rudra, who is not Shiva, if he tries to drink the ocean of poison, or if he tries to drink poison that came out from the ocean, then he will be destroyed. Similarly, an ordinary person who imitates the behavior of great personalities will also be destroyed. We are all aware of the pastime of churning of the milk ocean. When the Devas and the Asuras got together, and initially the very deadly halahala poison emerged from that kshirabdhi, the milk ocean. And when that came out, then Lord Shiva came and he partook of that poison just to save the demigods and the demons. And he held the poison in his throat. And it became a nice ornament for his throat. And therefore Lord Shiva is called Neelakantha. However, Srila Prabhupada mentions in various places that if we try to drink even a drop of poison, then we will die. We will not be able to hold it in our throat. So we should not try to imitate the ways of Lord Shiva like some people do. So the same principle applies even to Lord Krishna. When such great personalities as Lord Shiva and Lord Brahma are performing activities which are not subject to the ordinary laws of karma, because they are exceptionally powerful and blessed by the Lord, they may be untouched, but if we try to imitate, we will be untouched. We will certainly be touched. Lord Krishna, being Supreme Personality of Godhead, is not subject to the laws of karma himself, because he is the maker of the laws of karma. He is not subject to any of the laws of material nature. He is the maker of material nature and their supervisor. So Lord Krishna performs a Rasa Leela in relation to his internal potency. Lord Krishna doesn't sport with the material potency. In the very first chapter of Rasa Panchadhyay, the very first two words are Bhagavan Api, which means that even though Krishna is God, this verse describes how Krishna on this autumn night, the Sharat Purnima night, was captivated by the beauty of Vrindavan and he decided to perform the Rasa Leela dance. And he wanted to perform this pastime even though he is God. So this is an important point. We cannot understand the activities of someone unless we understand his position. So we cannot understand Lord Shiva's activities unless we understand who Lord Shiva is. Similarly with Brahma, and all the more so with Lord Krishna. Because people don't understand who Krishna is, therefore they criticize him. They criticize especially his Rasa Leela, because they think that he is an ordinary human being. And for us, it is reprehensible, it is contemptible, it is abominable to do things that people say rightly, that we should not associate with other people's wives. Certainly it is a sinful activity. It is very, very immoral. And such a thing will destroy the society completely. So as human beings, we should be very careful that we should follow these principles of morality very, very strictly. But at the same time, when Lord Krishna descends here into the world, we should know who he is. Time and time again, in the various scriptures, Lord Krishna declares himself to be the Supreme Lord. And it also mentions how he is unaffected by anything of this material world. When Lord Krishna descends here into the material world, he not only descends to establish the principles of dharma and to show ideal behavior like he does for in the case of Lord Ramachandra. But very importantly, he also descends to show that he is God and that he cannot be imitated. In Dwarka, Lord Krishna behaved just like an ideal grihastha. He would perform all the religious functions that a grihastha is supposed to do. Similarly, in Vrindavan, Krishna behaved just like an ordinary cowherd boy. He used to be afraid as a small child of his mother when she would get ready to chastise him. He would also eat and sleep just like ordinary human beings or other children do. He would do mischief. But sometimes he would perform extraordinary activities like killing of demons. When he was simply a small child, a baby of only 5 or 6 days old, in his mother's lap, he killed Putana, who was such a powerful Rakshasi. So Srila Prabhupada cautions that if someone criticizes Krishna for doing the Rasa Leela and therefore wants to justify his own immoral behavior by citing this example, then Prabhupada said, he can also lift Govardhan Hill. If he is able to lift Govardhan Hill, then yes, he can perform the Rasa Leela, if he likes. But if he is not able to lift Govardhan Hill, then he should be very, very careful. He should stick to proper, righteous, virtuous and moral conduct, as given in the scriptures. Moral conduct is meant for us. The concept of morality cannot be imposed upon God, because God is all good. God is absolute. There is no question of immorality in anything that God does. Whatever God does is a supreme morality, is a supreme good. God can never do anything that is wrong or that is bad or that is immoral. As human beings, there is consideration of morality and immorality, good and bad, sinful and pious. But for Lord Krishna, there is no such consideration. If Lord Krishna lies, that lying is a perfection. If Lord Krishna steals, that is also perfection. If Lord Krishna deals with those who appear to be other people's wives, that is also perfection. And I use the word those who appear to be for good reason, which we'll mention in a few minutes later. So whatever Lord Krishna does, because he's supremely in a transcendental position as the absolute truth, there is nothing that is contemptible about him. There is not a trace of contamination in him. This is Lord Krishna's position. Furthermore, as the absolute truth, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur explains, he has unlimited spiritual potencies. His one transcendental potency manifests in many, many different ways. And the gopis are none other than the personification of his internal potencies, his internal spiritual energy. So who are the gopis and who is Krishna? This is the important thing. when we are talking about the Rasalila between Krishna and the gopis, we need to know who Krishna is and simultaneously also who the gopis are. We just talked briefly about who Krishna is. But then who are the gopis? The gopis are his pleasure potencies. They are his shaktis. They are his internal energy. The gopis have nothing to do with this material world. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has quoted the Padma Puran to say that the gopis are not ordinary mortals. They are not human beings. All the gopis had spiritual bodies. Their bodies were not material. Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that there are different categories of gopis who are with Krishna. You see, when any big man travels from one place to another place, he will not go alone. He will carry so many secretaries, assistants and so on with him. Similarly, when Lord Krishna descends into this world, he doesn't come alone. He also brings with him his eternal associates. Like Nanda Maharaj, Mother Yashoda, cowherd boys like Subal, Sridhama and so on. And he also brings with him many, many gopis from his transcendental spiritual abode, Goloka Vrindavan. And many of them come with him to participate in the exhibition of his transcendental pastimes here within the material world. So many of the gopis who are with Krishna in Vrindavan, they are called Nitya Siddha gopis. Nitya means eternally and Siddha means perfect. So they are gopis who came down with Krishna from the spiritual world. So they are all fully spiritual, 100% spiritual bodies, just like Krishna's body is fully spiritual. For us, there is a difference between the body and the soul. But for Krishna and for these gopis, there is no difference. Within and without, they are all spiritual. There is no difference between their body and their soul. These are the Nitya Siddha gopis. And then there are other gopis who are called the Sadhana Siddha gopis, who have become Siddha or perfect by virtue of practicing sadhana, spiritual practices. And they have achieved the stage of perfection. And because of that spiritual perfection, their bodies have also become spiritual. Their bodies have become completely spiritualized. They have not a taint of any contamination of matter within their bodies. And actually, they are all on the liberated platform. Now, all of you are aware that when we begin bhakti, our faith is meager. And then when we make advancement, the faith becomes very strong. And we go through various stages before we reach the ultimate stage of love of God, which is called Krishna Prem. First of all, we have a little faith, Adho Shraddha, Tatha Sadhu Sangha. We come to the association of devotees, Tha Bhajana Kriya. We perform devotional practices of sadhana bhakti. And as we do that, the heart becomes purified of all unwanted things, anartha nivritti. When the heart is substantially cleansed of all these unwanted things, we become very resolute and determined in our service to Krishna. It's the stage of nishtha. After nishtha, we develop taste for serving Krishna. It's called ruchi. Then we become extremely attached to Krishna. It is called asakti. Then we develop ecstatic symptoms of love for Krishna. We develop ecstatic love for Him. That's called bhava. And then we come to the perfection, the pinnacle of all, which is Krishna Prem, the stage of prema. This is the goal of our life, to reach this stage. Even when one reaches that stage of prema, there is further advancement based on that platform. The platform of prema is 100% pure. There is not an atomic trace of any material contamination there. What to speak of lust? Nothing else of this world can contaminate the consciousness of someone who is on that platform of prema. All these gopis, even the Nitya Siddha gopis, were on that platform of prema, and even on the platform of prema, higher and higher and higher, they were going up. So where is the question of any trace of material lust? Where is the question of any material contamination? So the relationship between Krishna and the gopis is purely on the spiritual platform. It has nothing to do with mundane lust. When we see the activities of men and women in this world, we have a certain idea. And we know what it involves. And therefore we try to superimpose these ideas upon the dealings of Krishna with the gopis. Srila Prabhupada one time narrated an amusing anecdote to illustrate this principle. One time there was a cow who was in a goshala. And the goshala caught fire, unfortunately. And the cow happened to be alone in the goshala at that time. And upon seeing the fire, she ran out very swiftly in fear. Then after this incident, the cow became so frightened on seeing red color that every time she saw red color, she would run in fear, thinking it was fire. So Srila Prabhupada says in the same way, we have got a certain idea by looking at the relationships of men and women in this world. And we have a certain idea of what is moral, what is immoral. So every time we see what appears to be a human man with what appear to be ladies together, we think it must be the same thing. So we superimpose our experience of this world on Krishna's dealings with the gopis and say, because it is of a certain nature here, because the dealings of man and woman in this world are based upon lust, therefore the dealings of Krishna and the gopis are also based upon lust. But it's not so. Because Krishna is entirely spiritual, and because the gopis are entirely spiritual, therefore the dealings between them are also entirely spiritual. There is no material lust, no material taint in these dealings. In the Chaitanya Charitamrita, Kaviraj Goswami has explained this difference between kama and prema. Atmendriya priti vancha tare boli kam, Krishnendriya priti vancha tare dhore prema nam. He says that the attempt to satisfy our own senses is called lust, and the attempt to satisfy Krishna's senses is called love. So anything that is not true love, anything that is not meant to purely serve the senses, the transcendental senses of Sri Krishna and to please Him, is lust. Lust is not simply the dealings of men and women in this world. Lust is anything that is different from the desire to serve Krishna and to please Him with a pure heart. So when one serves Krishna like that, one automatically becomes purified. So by serving Krishna, if one becomes pure, how can Krishna be impure? The gopis are the topmost examples of pure devotion to Krishna. Ramya kachit upasana vrajavadhu vargiyanaya kalpita. There is no better and higher example of purest form of bhakti, of prema, than the gopis. So how can there be any trace even of anything material in their dealings with Krishna? It's not possible. So these are dealings that are completely on the spiritual platform. The gopis represent the internal potency or the spiritual energy of Krishna. And Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur gives a very interesting analogy for this. Because Krishna is dealing with His internal energy, His own spiritual energy, He is not dealing with anything outside of Himself. Therefore, Krishna's dealings with the gopis can be compared to a child playing with his own reflection. We see children playing with their own reflection. They may try to catch their own shadow, or they may do. So what is wrong with that? When a man deals with another woman in this world, he is dealing with somebody outside of himself. He is dealing with someone who is not part of himself, who is not his property. But everything is Krishna's property. Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati explains that everything is Krishna. Not in the sense that the Mayavadis understand, but in the sense that nothing is outside of Krishna, nothing is independent of Krishna, nothing is separate from Krishna. It is Krishna and Krishna's energies. That's all. There is nothing else in existence. And especially when Krishna wants to deal with his internal potency, then it is Krishna dealing with his own energy. There is nothing objectionable about that. And furthermore, Krishna is in the heart of every living entity. He is in the heart of the gopis. He is in the heart of the husbands of the so-called husbands of the gopis. He is in everybody's heart. He is the lord of everyone. He is the pati. Pati means the lord. It also means the husband. He is the lord of every living entity. So if the lord is associated with the gopis, there is nothing objectionable there. Someone may say he went to a solitary place with the gopis. But Krishna is in the most solitary place with the living entity, with all of us. Where is that? In our heart. So the Vanshivata, the banks of the Yamuna, were not the most solitary places, because there were so many living entities there also. There were the trees, the birds, the insects, everyone was there. But in the heart is the soul and the super soul together. So Krishna is as it is in the most solitary place, alone with every living entity in all of creation. So there can be nothing objectionable. And another point, if there was anything objectionable, if the dealings of Lord Krishna with the gopis were like the dealings of ordinary men and women of this world, why would a Naishthika Brahmachari like Shukadev Goswami be glorifying the Rasalila? Why should he be talking at length about the Rasalila? One of the principles of Brahmacharya is that one should avoid talking of the mundane dealings of men and women in this world. We should not relish such subjects. We should not even hear or what to speak of such subjects. Shukadev Goswami was such a transcendental person. As soon as he was born, when he left his home to be a brahmachari, he passed by a lake where some young ladies were taking baths. And when they saw him, they just understood immediately that this person is transcendental. And they continued the bathing without any botheration. When Vyasadev, the elderly father of Shukadev, came behind him saying, ha putra, where are you going, my son? Even though Vyasadev is so wise, so learned, is an incarnation of the Lord, Shaktya Veshavatar, and he is a compiler of the Vedas. But when he came, the ladies immediately covered themselves up to be decent and respectable. So Vyasadeva was surprised and he asked them, that why are you doing this in front of me? I'm like your grandfather. And when my young son walked, he's only 16 years old, and at that time you covered yourselves. So what is the reason? They said that because he's completely on the transcendental platform, he doesn't see the difference between men and women in this world, which is the bodily conception of life. But because you are a grihastha, so you have to make these distinctions. So you see the difference between man and woman. Therefore, for Shukadev Goswami, we didn't see it necessary to cover ourselves properly. So this Shukadev Goswami, who is such a Naishthika Brahmachari, for him, how and why would he describe the Rasalila if it was something ordinary and mundane? Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, even if one doesn't accept that he is Krishna, at least one accepts that he was a sannyasi. And he was such a staunch sannyasi, we cannot even imagine. It cannot be followed, the rigor of his sannyas, the austerities and the vows that he followed, very, very strict in all his dealings. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would day and night relish the descriptions, the poetic descriptions from the Bhagavatam and the descriptions of other great Vaishnava acharyas about the dealings of Krishna and the gopis. Why would he do that if these were just mundane things? Similarly, Madhvacharya and many, many other great stalwart acharyas who were very, very spiritually advanced, they also relished this. Sripad Madhvacharya himself has explained that these gopis in their previous lives were already great sages. They were the personified Upanishads. They had already developed transcendental knowledge. They were already liberated. And Madhvacharya says, unless one is on the liberated platform, one cannot be attracted to Krishna in the conjugal mood. It is because the gopis, continuing from their previous lives, were already on the highest platform of spiritual life, and they were in a mood of being attracted to Krishna in this way, there is absolutely nothing objectionable about this. These are activities purely on the spiritual platform. So in this way, we have only a few reasons today about why we should understand that Krishna's dealings with the gopis is very, very pure. In the spiritual world, this is the highest pastime. But in the material world, it is considered reprehensible by those people who are not familiar with spiritual ways in the spiritual world. This material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. What is highest in the spiritual world appears lowest here in the material world. So because the pastime of Krishna with the gopis, the Rasalila in the spiritual world is the highest, and therefore, to ordinary mundane vision here, it appears to be the lowest. And people who do not know these intricacies of Krishna's dealings and the science of Krishna consciousness, they may criticize. But as students of the Srimad Bhagavatam, we can relish these pastimes because we are hearing them from the right sources in the parampara. In fact, the very last verse, the very first verse I mentioned was started with Bhagavan Api. And the very last verse, we don't have time to discuss it today, but gives the phala shruti, the benefit of hearing about Krishna's Rasalila. And the phala shruti is that one becomes freed from lust. So if anyone objects and you are discussing this with somebody, at least you can mention this one point. But, and there is a big but here, it's not that we can hear from anyone and everyone, first of all. We must hear only from those who are coming in the proper disciplic succession. And number two, we must hear systematically from the beginning. Right from understanding that we are not the body, we are the soul, the basic Bhagavad Gita philosophy, going all the way up through the 9 cantos of Srimad Bhagavatam. And then we come to the 10th canto, hear Krishna's pastimes. And then when you hear Rasalila, then you become completely purified. If you prematurely hear the Rasalila without understanding basic concepts from people who also don't have proper concepts, that will increase our material conceptions. The dealings of Krishna with the gopis are completely under the jurisdiction of Yoga Maya. The activities of ordinary men dealing with ordinary women in this world is completely under the jurisdiction of Mahamaya. Prabhupada explains in one place that Krishna's dancing with the gopis is not like an ordinary ball dance of this world. Because in Prabhupada's time in the West, this was common, ball dancing. Now, of course, you have other forms of dancing. So it's not to be compared like that. The Rasa Leela is the ultimate pinnacle of Krishna's pastimes. The highest perfection, the sweetest of all his pastimes. So if we read the 10th canto of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, there are very elaborate purports, and we will be able to clarify all the different misconceptions that occur. And whenever people talk to us, then we can explain nicely. As I said at the beginning, that the subject is very vast and there is so much that is to be learnt about this, even to clarify the misconceptions, but being just an introductory kind of lecture, I have tried to summarize some of the important points in this connection. So thank you very much. We'll leave some time for question answers. So if you have any questions, I'll be happy to try to answer them. Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, Rohini Nandan Prabhu, right? And another point we can mention by the time the mic reaches there, for people who criticize Krishna and the gopis, when the Rasa Leela was performed in the Srimad Bhagavatam as it is described here, Krishna was only 8 years old. And the gopis were younger. We see so many children playing with each other, boys and girls. Do we make a hue and cry about it? Do we say, oh, it's so immoral, and because, you know, the children are playing, so I will also do the same thing? We don't say that. So probably this can be the first thing you can say if somebody comes up to you, say. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Thank you, Prabhu, for excellent presentation. You started saying that when Karmi or a materialistic person wants to address this issue, this is the last Brahmas to criticize Krishna. So when we are, what points you have presented that for the understanding of the devotees, that you should be lust free, then in parampara, you have read first to ninth canto and then studied the Leela, and then you can talk about this. So, for the understanding of the devotee, this subject is very clearly understood. But when you are dealing with karmis, then probably they will not go in all these details, and they would straight away come to the point that morally it is not correct. Then the whole thing has to be explained to them, otherwise they keep criticizing.
Yes, that is why I mentioned this one point you can tell them first. Krishna was 8 years old when this pastime happened. And secondly, as I mentioned, I started the discussion by talking about how, in order to understand the activities of someone, he must first understand who he is or who she is. Even in ordinary life, we see that. If there's a king or a president, he can just walk in, he can do so many things. We cannot do that. So we need to understand who is Krishna and who are the gopis. So when we understand that, then the relationship between them and the activities between them will also become clarified. So without doing that, if we directly want to understand the activities of someone, then we will definitely get bewildered. And we can give the example of the child playing with the reflection. It's one example we can give. We can give the example of the cow in the Goshala that caught fire. And like this, with simple examples, we can try to illustrate to them.
Thank you.
Any other question? Yes, Mataji, at the back.
Hi, Bol. Yes, you will excuse
oh, Mahaprabhu
me for the little heavy in one sense that I read in Times of India, in the headline in Bombay Times, before 2 years, in Bandra, there was a, you know, people are, because Krishna was playing, means doing this Ras Leela, so now, Garva, you know, the dance, the people in material world, you know, so going on a very big way in, throughout India. So I'm giving little glimpse of what headline with bold letters it was written in Bombay Times in the front page with 2 inches big words that 3,000 contraceptives were sold on one shop where the Ras dance, this Dandiya dance was going on. And so I want to really want to understand when our parents, because they consider the way they dress up, the way they come and they do the Dandiya, they consider this is something like that what Lord Krishna was doing. And these parents, they are all fools. They allow their children to go there, allow them to go there, when this is the result published in paper, and they know it very well, because in our philosophy it is clearly said that if you are keeping the water and fire together, it's going to melt. So how to explain these fools that who knows very well that what is this Dandiya is going on, it is all practically illicit sex.
Hare Krishna. It's hard to deal with a lawyer. But yes, as I mentioned, that Prabhupada says that Krishna's Rasa Leela, dancing with the gopis, is not like the ballroom dancing or any other form of dancing of this world. And anyway, gone are the days when there was even some semblance of religiosity about our festivals. Nowadays, mostly festivals have become occasions for sense enjoyment or for socializing. There are hardly the religious flavor, the spiritual flavor, the devotional element is practically speaking lost. So it is only by the process of education, educating people about Krishna consciousness, that all these misconceptions can be removed. So it is very essential that our preaching should become more and more powerful so that these misconceptions can be removed. And also we need to educate people in the media so that they will not misrepresent things and sensationalize things for the education of people in general. Okay, so any other... Yes, Mataji.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
I am asking this question on behalf of someone. The person wants to know that you said in the beginning that Srimad Bhagavatam should be read from first canto and then eventually you should read the 10th canto. Because if people read the 10th canto straight away, they will misunderstand. They won't understand who Krishna is. And they will misunderstand his pastimes. So this person is saying that the Krishna book contains almost all the pastimes of Krishna, and it's very readily available during book distribution. So will people not misunderstand? Because this is the 10th canto they'll be reading. They have not read the other cantos. So please, can you clarify?
Yes, actually, the reason Prabhupada wrote the Krishna book very early on is that he feared that he may not live long enough. You see, when Prabhupada went to the West, he only had the first two cantos, if I'm not mistaken, translated. And then as he continued his preaching, he was going on translating, third, fourth, fifth, sixth. And he was in a hurry. He knew it was a race against time because he was already very elderly. And he was fearing that he may not live till he reached the tenth canto, which was the most important part of the Srimad Bhagavatam. So, even as he was continuing his translations, he put the entire tenth canto in narrative form. And then he continued with his verse-by-verse translations of the Srimad Bhagavatam. And he managed to reach only up to the beginning of the tenth canto, some chapters only. And also, in Krishna book, Prabhupada has not just given the verses of the Srimad Bhagavatam. He has given elaborate commentary. He has explained everything in great detail. So these five chapters of the Rasa Panchadhyaya, if we read that even from Krishna book, we will see Prabhupada has very painstakingly explained the spiritual nature of these pastimes. He has given so many different arguments. He has quoted from the acharyas and given many examples and illustrations himself. So it's not just the verses. It's the commentaries, the explanations that are important. Then we can understand what these pastimes really mean. Okay, so one last question. Yes. Yeah, question is that we are presently under the Mahamaya potency of the Lord. Can we come to a point when we can also be under the Yogamaya potency and join Krishna in his various pastimes? Yes, certainly we can join. It is premature for us to speculate which pastimes and how and so on. Right now our focus should be basically on purifying our heart of all the anarthas by rendering devotional service in all its limbs. And our focus should be on trying to be attracted to Krishna. And when we become spiritually perfect, automatically all these things will be revealed. And at that stage of perfection, when we go back to Goloka Vrindavan, then certainly we will enter into Krishna's pastimes.
Bhaktyatvananyaya shakya aham eva midhorjuna gyatum drashtum cha tattvena praveshtum cha parantapa.
So only by undivided devotional service can you understand me as I am, O Arjuna, standing in front of you. Having known me in this way, gyatum, then you will see me, you will be qualified to see me, drashtum, and then you will be qualified to enter into my abode and my pastimes, praveshtum cha. So our entry into the spiritual world will happen at the right time when Krishna so desires. If we simply render our devotional service under the proper guidance, in the proper way, then at the right time, everything will happen. Okay? All right, so thank you very much. Okay. Last, okay. Yes. What is the human life meant for? Human life is meant for developing pure love for Lord Krishna, which is our constitutional position. Yes, yes, right. Hare Krishna. Yes. What is the difference between God and a human being? Why should we differentiate God and a human being? because God is the ultimate source of everything and He is all powerful, we are not the source of everything. We are infinitesimal parts and parcels of the Lord. We are presently under the influence of the illusory potency of the Lord, and therefore we have to undergo birth, death, old age and disease, having occupied material bodies. So the perfection of life is that we understand we are part and parcel of Lord Krishna, of God. And by loving Him, we can be restored to our original spiritual position and we can have eternal happy lives in the spiritual world with Krishna. Okay, so we'll stop here. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Sri Sri Radha Gopinath ki jai, Gaur Premanande.
So let us express our gratitude to His Holiness Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj for this brilliant presentation, and we hope and pray that He makes these kind of visits more often. Let us thank Him by loudly chanting.